coming up on this week's Redcast.
The theme of this year's RegTech is all about three things: fear, greed, and safety. People are terrified of the fines, you know, because they've been big. I mean, we're talking billions, right? But I would actually say there's more greed here than fear.
It's challenging identifying the signals in the first place. It's then to tune the model to make sure you remove the high levels of false positive, of noise.
Fear is probably the catalyst and greed is the driver, right, down the line. You know, fear is what gets budget in compliance. That's the bottom line.
Effectively, regulatory data, as we all know, is golden source. You're sending it to a regulator, so why wouldn't we use certain aspects of that data to perform other controls within the bank?
You've got to make sure that the technology that's out there is, it's not just fulfilling one solution. There's just no scope for that anymore. It's got to fulfill multiple areas. What else can it do? What more can we achieve with this?
And at the end of the day, even the regulator cares about how data is accurate. Is the data complete? Do you have is the data up to date in order for you as a bank to implement the right and full?
Welcome to RegCast. I'm PJ DiGiamarino, CEO and founder of JWG. This is season 4, episode 6, where we're pushing past trade reporting into really the heart of the trade lifecycle, which is this key problem of how do we track market abuse? And what are some of the issues with surveillance that RegTech practitioners are really challenged with this year? The markets are changing. We got some great technologies that have been out there for a while. There's some new things people are thinking about this year and a whole set of themes at the conference. But before we get into that, let's first introduce the experts that we're bringing on stage here at RegCast. Robert, welcome to your first episode. Why don't you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi guys. So Rob Whittle, I work for Deutsche Bank. Been there since the best part of nearly 15 years. Last 3 years, managing a global team looking at internal surveillance, market abuse within our trading and our investment bank function. So look after a team globally, over 25 FTE across 5 locations, and looking at our suite of signals that are generated against our activity across the bank, and then investigating based on various signals and potential risk that we identify.
Thanks, Robin. And it was really great to meet you at the dinner in London that we ran as part of our series last year on trade surveillance. And there was a lot of great discussion there about the analogy between what we're talking about with surveillance and what's happening with the regulatory reporting, because obviously they're really different. Do you want to just give your perspective on having done both, what some of the differences are between these two functions?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, PJ. So if we look at the sort of regulatory landscape, if I look at some of the LIBOR stuff, what we're seeing a transition, what we've seen in the bank over the last number of years is moving to what we call sort of risk-free reporting. So effectively using sort of a regulatory reporting that effectively to drive, say, benchmark rates, benchmark indices. So effectively, rather than people putting in certain signals into their systems, we're now moving to regulatory reporting source for a lot of other controls within the bank. Now, obviously, that's extending or has potentially extended into certain avenues of what we do in surveillance, because effectively, regulatory data, as we all know, is golden source. You're sending it to a regulator, so why wouldn't we use certain aspects of that data to perform other controls within the bank? So certainly, at the moment, we've got a number of different swim lanes within our surveillance versus our reg reporting, but definitely we're moving towards using a more golden source and using that regulatory data to effectively utilize for various surveillance activities, whether that's internal, whether that's client. But certainly there's opportunities there, PJ, to leverage good data that's obviously going to our regulator at the moment and cross-purposing it into other parts of our controls.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that. And Sean, welcome back to the platform. Why don't you introduce your perspective on this, especially, given your experience having worked at a bank?
Sure. Sean Hurst, the principal regulatory advisor at Smosh, communications compliance software solution. And You know, from our perspective, obviously, we're dealing mainly with the communication side of things, which is a key aspect when you're aligning that with, obviously, the trade data that's out there, being able to find out those key points that are able to point to potential wrongdoing, that sort of thing. And also post-trade, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about here, is something that it's quite essential, not only from a proactive analytics perspective when you're using things like a surveillance tool that uses some very clever models, but you also want to be able to go through that data in a very clever way using maybe e-discovery type tools and doing that in a way that is quick, efficient, and easy. And that hasn't always been the case. If you're using some other older technologies, then potentially you're going to have some real challenges with that, because just the speed of being able to get access to that data is a challenge in itself. But I'm definitely seeing a big shift. People are very aware of what is possible now, and that is changing. It has changed over time. I remember going into some clients showing our solution to them, and they thought it looks like magic. This is a few years ago. It's not as impressive anymore. It's a very impressive solution, don't get me wrong, but they've seen this. They have this expectation that things should be instant. They can't waste time. Budgets aren't getting bigger. You know, Rob's got a nice big team there, but I'm sure you fight tooth and nail for every employee you have, and to get new resources, it's not easy, right? So you got to make sure that the technology that's out there it's not just fulfilling one solution, which, you know, that's there's just no scope for that anymore. It's got to fulfill multiple areas, and it could be on the surveillance side, it could be on the wrongdoing, it could be from an HR perspective, but from a trade surveillance perspective, you know, it's becoming something that's crucial. So we're definitely seeing big shifts there. People are embracing more technology, they're realizing what is out there, and they're thinking long and hard about, you know, what else can I do? What more can we achieve with this? At least that's the way I'm seeing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerome, I mean, what's your perspective now, just flying back from California for your big kickoff this year?
Yeah, so, I mean, let me quick introduction maybe about myself. So my name is Jerome. I'm working for NICE Actimize, and I look after the regulatory compliance business for Actimize in EMEA. And I agree with Sean. So we clearly see a shift and an adoption of new technologies in order to better support those surveillance programs or those surveillance initiatives across the board, not only on the communication surveillance space, but also on the trading surveillance space. And I guess it's a direct answer from the fines and from the regulatory pressure that we have to deal with, and also from the need for efficiency. Because as you rightly said, Sean, as well, I mean, budgets are limited, so having efficient, you know, solutions to detect risks remain, as of today, one of the key goals for all the compliance C-levels, I guess. And because we have to deal with a little bit more complexity, you know, in today's world, like, you know, more complex trading strategies, cross markets, cross products, more complex communication tools and communication technologies that didn't exist in the past. Of course, there is an impact on any technology program supporting the implementation of compliance and controls. So clearly, we are in this. We are experiencing that shift. We see more and more adoption, and yes, it's moving fast.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the theme of this year's RegTech is all about three things: fear, greed, and safety. Right, and if I think about this particular area in the landscape you guys lay out, it ticks all three boxes. People are terrified of the fines, you know, because they've been big. I mean, we're talking billions, right? But I would actually say there's more greed here than fear, right? Because there's greed in terms of cost, and you guys have all pulled out some of the efficiency drivers, but there's also greed in terms of alpha. In understanding the markets better, right? And knowing what you know within your organization so you can better use that and leverage things like AI and Gen AI for those purposes. Not easy to do, but certainly now much more art of the possible and in the conversation. And that gets to the final point, which is safety, which to me in this space plays out to standards. And I think what we're seeing with the post-trade regulatory reporting with EMIR and the CFTC rewrite and the EMIR refit and the JFSA and all the other regimes that are going in is they're all starting to standardize. And that's conversation has become clear to the regulators that, you know, they can be a bit more aggressive in terms of thinking, well, how standardized is your infrastructure? And as things move more on venue, and as there's more transparency to pricing in the market, that stuff that wasn't so standardized now actually falls within scope. So those conversations you had about that one particular bond, you know, now actually could be influenced by something happening on a venue. So we need to get better at how we capture data from within the firm and what's going on in the market, because that's where all the manipulation is likely to occur. So that, as we heard on the last episode, the common domain model is being used to describe all the events in the trade lifecycle and could be a big boon to picking up things cross asset class. But you have to get past those regulatory exams on what data are you collecting and how are you going through it. And the problem in this space is it's very, very noisy. You know, throwing any kind of tooling at it generates lots of false positives. So the firms are struggling with getting their budgets down while they still have to add all these people to look at things. So without getting this patchwork of systems and different types of data that all play together, it's really, really difficult. So for us, this is a quickly maturing area that we're really keen to dig into at our conference on the 7th of Feb and figure out where it's going. But the big question for us is, what's the appetite? So let's start there. I guess, Rob, you know, what impact have these fines really had, and to what extent is it a fear or a greed?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, PJ. So I guess it's getting the balance between what we want to do and what we have to do. So in terms of the impact to address that, we've had, we responded to regulatory, and we have great engagement with our regulators, but we've responded to effectively form a remediation plan or a market conduct remediation plan, which stretches across our firm. And it systematically employs a number of folk with a governance strategy. But obviously that then feeds into a technology budget and a technology appetite to effectively put money into stuff that we want to do proactively to innovate and move forward to actually stuff that we need to do, we have to do, because we've committed various changes to our regulators. So we have, you know, a lot of hiring, there's cost, there's audit scrutiny, every single commitment that we share with a regulator now, we close an audit trail, we close what's called a committed action plan, we effectively audit that action plan. And so it all involves resources or costs into the business, but effectively we can deliver exactly what our regulators need. But obviously in doing so, you're requiring budget. And I say a lot of our budget is, you know, prioritized on making sure we commit to what we've said we're going to do. And it's getting that balance between completing that exercise, and that is absolutely imperative, to doing some of the stuff that we want to proactively go after. So you mentioned some of the stuff there, PJ, around AI, around standardizing and potentially looking at how our signals work and, you know, and collaborating with maybe some of our peers. And that's all kind of stuff we potentially want to do. But at the moment, obviously the priority is making sure our regulators are happy.
So there's stuff on the list that you want to get to, but can't quite get there because there's some must-dos that
exactly
for the regulators.
Yeah, and some of it we can intertwine, but some of it has to just go, you know, deferred to another month or even another year of nice to have, because we've got to get the must-have, as you say, done as priority.
And like, this is such a big challenge. These systems were written 20, 30 years ago. Right,
exactly.
You're having to go clean out the Aegean stables while the horses are still in them.
You know, absolutely.
What does that feel like?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like it feels like a sort of circle. I mean, sometimes we've got systems that are consistently being upgraded in the bank. Obviously, we're also cognizant, PJ, of, you know, we've got to stay. So my team have to stay one step ahead and consistently of what our front office colleagues are doing, who we're effectively surveilling. You know, so to make sure you're one step ahead is also that sort of culture and having the technology to make sure you're playing. you're not playing into their into their space. So we're not reactive to that. We have to be, you know, consistently devising our signals, devising our models to make sure we're one step ahead. So that again is all part of the sort of moving positively forward.
Yeah, your front office colleagues are the guys in the stables in this analogy.
And exactly.
They are incentivized to be get out there and actually mix it up in the market and find ways to make money. And exactly. So their models then are going to move ahead of where yours are. How do you keep up?
Well, yeah, I mean, within my institution, particularly, we have a very sort of rigorous, regular review validation, and we have a separate sort of area that revalidate the model in a standalone, a segregated function to make sure that our modeling and our signal generation, the way our algorithms work to identify kind of CCA behavior, is consistently updated. And that's actually one of our sort of commitments to regulators is we regularly review the data that comes into our model. We have a data inventory, we have data governance, and we have regular reviews of those signals and models to make sure we're, you know, ahead of the game. We're calibrating on a regular basis. It's difficult, PJ, because as you say, you're trying to change some of this stuff on a daily basis while trading is still going on. So it's not like we can just shut the front office down, clean everything up, and then restart it in 2 or 3 months' time. You've got to try and do this while things are kind of moving. Yeah. And obviously, then you've got the industry changes as well in the background. So yeah,
exactly. And in no other area like surveillance, will you see the impact of AI? You know, the EU AI Act that's been leaked out there now is actually talking about creating an EU AI board that will have each country will be coming together with a, you know, cross industry, cross sector. But you guys are years ahead. I mean, you're decades ahead of where that is going. I mean, because you have people that have to be on top of these models, and it's not just the trading activity, it's the voice and the electronic communications and the chats and all that kind of stuff as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I specifically look after the trader, so we monitor the traders. But then you've got, as you say, PJ, you've got the e-coms, you know, the voice. We use little lexicons to look at, you know, certain words have said or certain words are written, and it springs up an alert to investigate why did someone say that in that context? What was the context of that word said? And when was it said? Was it said at a weekend? Was it said at 3 o'clock in the morning? Or was it said during the course of the day? All that type of stuff. Absolutely. All plays into the whole complexity of the various models that we have.
So Sean, this must be music to your ears in terms of hearing about like written commitments and people needed to check stuff off. I mean, that must be driving people into your camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, we go back to what you're saying before, whether it's greed or whether it's fear that's driving these things. I think honestly, fear is probably the catalyst and greed is the driver, right? Mm-hmm. Down line. You know, fear is what gets budget in compliance. That's the bottom line. But that's the only time that compliance really gets a decent budget is when there's big problems and fines that are going to be threatening. And what happens with that then, we were seeing a lot more of the silos being broken down between different departments where they're coming together and saying, well, you're looking at this product that could potentially be very helpful for you, but also could be helpful for us. You mentioned AI. You know, one of the big challenges we're going to see in the AI space over the next few years is a lack of training data. But when we look at companies like Deutsche Bank, you have tons of training data that could be used. As long as you can get to it and push it into these models and actually use it for these training, you're going to do great. And now a lot of the time, these compliance teams are taking on these tools that, may, for example, from us, e-communications, there's voice, there's video, there's text, there's instant messages, emails, there's so much content. And that can easily be a massive driver for these AI initiatives that are happening within companies. And what we're finding, a lot of companies and a lot of clever folks in some of these compliance and surveillance teams are starting to realize, wait, there's some value to these products outside of what we're doing, and they're able to increase those budgets, right? And it's interesting to see, because it's not us driving that. That should be something in sales. That's what I should be doing, right? Pushing that narrative. But it's not us doing that. That is the companies themselves. But we're definitely seeing some shifts in attitude towards these products and towards just how things are done. And it's good to see, right? It's just a lot more transparency for the end user. Me as somebody that banks with banks like Deutsche Bank, I'm going to be, you know, happy with the fact that these sort of things are coming around, because there's a lot more insight coming from you, Rob. I'm sure, you know, your team and what you're doing, you're able to get to those bad actors pretty quickly. You're able to keep people in line and make people accountable a lot easier than maybe it was 5 years ago, because you are using these tools, because you are using the initiatives that are coming across from the regulators and from other bodies.
And use that word accountability, Sean, which I think is, you put your finger on it. Is that part of the greed, or is that just fear? Because if you think about the accountability from a being out in the market and generating alpha, you know, it's even knowing what my guys are up to and where I might be able to get trading strategies from this desk into that desk, or find ways that, you know, we can be out there with doing more with clients.
Well, you need to add another term there, just collaborative, right? I think these companies and these different departments are needing to become more collaborative, break down those walls between the various areas, because there's just so much shared knowledge and capability that they should be sharing. You know, I worked in banking for a long time, and people inside the bank are competitive with their other departments, and it's weird to see. You're working for the same team, but that doesn't seem to be as bad these days. I don't know. Rob would be able to comment better on that than I would, but it's good to see that accountability is there a lot more so now. I mean, things like senior manager regime, when that came in, that really made a big change to things. Yeah. And we're seeing more of that. I think we're going to continue seeing more of that as time goes on.
Yeah, so I'm really glad you hit on that collaboration near and dear to our heart. I think part of what isn't required here to get to more safety, to get to more standards, is to get the people that are accountable to be identified so that they can come, they know they need to work together. And traditionally, that's been very hard. As you say, there have been walls up and silos, and people didn't want to leave the confines to go have the conversation, because why would you? And it wasn't really in your interest. But now that changes a whole different, it brings a whole different set of behaviors to the table and to the market overall. Jerome, you've been at this for a while. How are you seeing it change?
The drivers, I would phrase them around maybe more risk and efficiency, right? Instead of fear and greed, because it's related, obviously, right? So the fear, so in fact, you are trying to manage your risk efficiently. You are trying to capture more and more signals within the firm in order to identify wrongdoing. So you want to make sure that your risks are covered. So this is really the step one. And then the efficiency, which is cost related to your point and to the greed, obviously, the efficiency is more about, you know, do I have the right signals, you know, or am I swamped with false positive? This is what you've just described. And the link between the two, it is what Rob described, spending time on collecting data, removing the noise, cleaning the data, and so on. And at the end of the day, even the regulator cares about how data is accurate. Is the data complete? Is the data up to date in order for you as a bank to implement the right controls and the right, the right controls or the right surveillance activities? And clearly we've seen that technology can help on cleaning those data, you know, ensuring data completeness in order to ensure risk coverage. So this is an important part where technology helped. AI, of course, and other, I would say, big data techniques help to better handle those type of activities. And at the end of the day, if you want to be effective on managing a surveillance program and dealing with all this data and capturing the right signals, you need to be able to play with the toolbox. You know, very often I hear some clients complaining about the black box. And clearly when I hear Rob describing how hands-on he is on managing the data, for me, it shows that, you know, you are going to write the right direction. Being in control of your data, being in control of your analytics, with the ability to create your own models, to tune your detection models, to go beyond just a simple, threshold tuning activity, and to make sure that you're going to have the right analytics tailored to the risk that you are trying to monitor. And all this is related, right? Risk, I need to manage, I need to detect those risks. And efficiency, do I have the right capabilities in order to manipulate the data, crunch the data, analyze them in order to implement a proper surveillance program at scale, or surveillance or conduct, or either way. So no matter the type of behavior that we are detecting. And for me, these are some of the key drivers from what keeps us busy and keeps the industry busy these days.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think we need to just pull out one difference here between what you guys are talking about and some of what's been happening in the regulatory reporting space, because we're talking about data that's flying around within the firm. And if something wrong, you have to send a report to the regulator, SAR. You know, what everyone's worried about now is how do I make sure what the regulator has told me exactly I need to be reporting is the right stuff out of all my systems. And that's where all the collaboration has already started with the common domain model. And that's why, you know, for this particular type of FX swap, this is how we think about putting the, you know, currency one into that field, because the currency one isn't something we call that. It's something the regulator calls it. In this space, Rob, you don't have a giant detailed trade report you have to put in. You just have a suspicious activity. How does the absence of any understanding of what the regulator cares about affect the need to collaborate in this space?
Yeah, I think it's huge, PJ, for the simple reason, as you rightly say, you don't have, like regulatory, where you have like an RTS, you have a certain standard, you have certain schemas which you have to, you know, adapt to in order to fulfill, in order to report and then go through the various engines at the regulator without getting rejections or acceptances. This is very different. It's very subjective. So we have to look to try and work out how, you know, what are the key signals or thematics we're going after, you know. So for example, if looking in our space, we kind of coalesce a lot of our signals around sort of 10 key themes. I'll call a couple of them out, particularly around sort of booking to sort of dummy counterparty, backdating, cancelling correct, around sort of P&L times, all this type of stuff. But I think the issue or the challenge, PJ, is on our peers. There's two challenges. One is that exactly in line with what the regulator wants us to look at. And obviously, with a lot of great engagement and relationship building with our various regulators, that's what we kind of believe we need to be focusing on. But then you'll have divergence across regulatory regimes across the globe. So the MAS may want to focus on particularly different areas to others. The ECB may have a different view. The Fed may have a different view to the other two areas. So it's trying to figure a common standardized model which keeps all of our different global regulators happy in terms of what we're doing. Is that the right sort of areas to focus? And then you've got the peer comparable of how our peers on the street, are they also looking at stuff in a similar way?
Before
they
looking we get the to the peer bit though, let's just just dial back on the data set, because that bit's really important, right? So at the end of the day, what the regulators scream about is, you know, these seven types of behaviors you should be looking for. Like, well, a wash trade is bad.
Yeah. You know,
Is it really that hard to spot a wash trade? I mean, isn't it like when you're looking for a wash trade, how many different attributes do you need to pick up to look at it? We're not talking about a dozen.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is where the challenge comes in. I think Jerome touched on it earlier. He's creating the signals and the thresholds and tuning the models to, it's easy to identify on a binary level a lot of these sort of signals, right? So if you're a wash trade, is relatively straightforward to identify. However, is that wash trade done by a person, a desk, or a function that's out of tune with what we would expect that group to be doing? So in other words, you know, certain functions within the bank and other banks would have, there's certain activity, and cancel correct is very similar, that you would expect a particular area to be doing cancel correct amends on quite a very regular basis. So for example, they block an allocation, you book a block, the client comes in, you then allocate the block. You have to cancel it to then reallocate. So that type of behavior is quite normal and quite, justifiable. There's good rationale. So it's a challenge in identifying the signals in the first place. It's then to tune the model to make sure you remove the high levels of false positive, of noise. When we trade seven figures a day of activity, and there's a lot of cancel correcting amending going on in a legitimate way, it's trying to identify from the noise which is the activity which somebody is doing which is slightly out of character to their own peer group, so within their desk, within their function, within their product, and then creating them alerts which are then reviewed manually, right? So we don't have at the moment AI. We don't have all the signals that are reviewed manually within my function. So it has to be manageable to a certain perspective as well.
Yeah, which limits your ability to get through the noise. So I guess, Sean, you were speaking about AI in this context earlier. What do you do about that?
I don't know. That's the big question, right? Obviously, I think Jerome on his side of the world, he's also using AI, clever machine learning, to try and help with these things, and it's a constant race to create better models and to get to a point that it stops you from having to be as manual as you're having to be at the moment, Rob. But there's a reason you're being that manual. It's not that you enjoy it. It's just it's kind of essential right now. And there are big strides being made in the AI space. AI as we know it today, in terms of generative AI, that's one aspect of it. But we've been using machine learning to help develop these models that are going to be able to detect, not only from the trade perspective, but also from the communications perspective, things like context and triggers and anomalies that are going to indicate that there is potentially something to look into. Now, those sort of things are going to keep improving, and hopefully it won't be as much of a manual process for you. At least you'll have surfaced, you'll have good stuff surfaced rather than too many false positives and even false negatives, right? Those are probably more of a concern. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a constant theme you're going to see throughout the year, not just because AI is talk of the town at the moment, but it is advancing so quickly. There's such a focus on it that the tools that we're developing internally are just going to keep improving. And it's going to get to a point where it's going to be far more efficient, but it is going to take time, right? Training, that takes time. Actually coming out with these models and making sure that they are transparent. Jerome mentioned earlier, customers feel like they are looking at black boxes, and that's not acceptable anymore. It might have been 2 years ago, 3 years ago, people just accepted this is what it is. It's a black box. You're doing some clever stuff there. We'll just accept that that's what it's doing. Now, transparency is key. People know what could go wrong if these models are doing the wrong thing. If there is bias, if there's hallucinations, all these sort of things can really impact what's happening downstream. So that transparency, that's challenging. It's difficult, even for us. How do you, the AI explainability is something you're going to hear a lot about over the next few years, but actually doing it in practice, having truly explainable AI, that's quite difficult. But it's something I'm sure Rob is going to expect.
Another thing we're picking up on at the conference is from a technology and operational resilience point of view, it also is coming into play within the next year. All these supplier contracts now need to be reviewed for DORA and all the equivalent regimes around the world. So, Jerome, how do you come at that? Because it's a delicate balance to strike. You got to provide transparency to benchmarking that you're doing and then how you're fine-tuning it per client, and then almost declare to the client how you're doing all that so they can control it and say to the regulator, this is all okay.
Yeah, so it's tricky, but here we are touching the operational aspect. Because at the end of the day, no matter your models, no matter the tuning, the system will somehow trigger an alert or bring a signal in front of, a compliance professional. And this is where also we sometimes forget about the operational aspect of the compliance function. You need to investigate. You need to be able to bring together multiple data points in a logical way, in a standard way, because you want to certainly share those informations with the regulator, to your point, or to the internal audit, or whoever is looking after the business that you are monitoring. And I guess too often we forget about the importance of having this type of standard disposition process or investigation process in which, all the signals that you will be analyzing should be landing. Because I guess, again, a lot of investigation and collaboration must happen when you are reviewing an alert. And if you start bringing things together, but complex things, voice, e-coms, and trades, you can correlate them across different data points and put together a timeline. This concept has been around for quite some time, the holistic surveillance concept, but now it can be implemented at scale. And I guess from an operational standpoint, it makes a big difference for the compliance function, because when Rob said it has to be manageable, this is what we are talking about. How are we managing all those alerts efficiently? And it seems to be simple, but having a proper, case management platform, correlation engine on top of it, with the ability to document, to track, to escalate all the investigation work, it makes a big difference from an from an efficiency perspective as well.
Yeah.
I just want to pick up on one thing there. When you talk about scale, something else to consider is not just scale about what you can do downstream, right, with what Rob and your team are doing in terms of being able to scale up, but consider how trading is going to be scaling up. Not only now we've got cryptocurrency being accepted as an asset, starting to trade on that. You've got auto traders happening, right? Robo traders, you know, those sort of things. It's just going to create even more work for compliance teams. And there has to be a way to scale to mitigate against that.
That's a great point. I guess, so Sean, let's turn to you then for our closing statements on why should people show up on the 7th of February? What's the call to action for, you know, busy guys like Rob? We've got to go check spreadsheets to come on and listen to this debate.
From my perspective, I just love being able to learn more from people like Rob. So come, because I want to learn more from you guys. But I think you'll also be able to learn a lot from us on the panel. And there's so many other great panels on the day as well. But there's certainly big shifts happening right now. Probably the biggest changes we've seen in the last 20 years in terms of technology. And you've got to learn as much as you can about it. I'm constantly learning, and any sort of sessions like this is just really helpful.
Yeah, biggest shift from technology, but also biggest shift from regulators. I've never seen them move anywhere near.
But that's coming because of the shifts in technology, right?
Well, yeah, we all, sometimes, you know, the road to hell is paved with great intentions. Jerome, what's your call to clarion call?
For me, come to the event, because I will be able to share with you the technology angle. So what's possible, what's real, where AI can be used to facilitate the detection that we've discussed about, to bring together all those signals. So we're always happy to share, like, under the hood, what's how technology really helps to support those compliance programs. And and as usual, as Sean said, we are always, of course, learning from our clients and from you guys. So join us. Let's discuss together. And it's going to be a great fun.
And last but not least, Rob.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. Just to sort of learn from, you know, the guys that you've got on the panel today, and sort of learning from each other, getting further collaboration within this space. I think the other thing is just understanding there's sort of pain felt and challenges felt across the board here. I think a lot of people sit there thinking, crikey, is it just me? I know from my regulatory days, I kind of felt it was just every regulator in the globe was just looking at my processes and my firm, and you kind of actually think, you know, when you're sharing some of these experiences, it isn't. and we're all feeling various challenges, and sometimes to, you know, feel that you're sort of part of a wider movement, and that pain and challenge is more shared than you probably think, can be quite comforting. And so I think people should, give the time for this, and we'll get a lot out of it. So thanks, PJ. Well,
thanks for that, gentlemen. And I will only echo that, you know, having run discussions of this type on this topic in New York, London, and Toronto last year, that it is a very homogenous set of issues that people are wrestling with, regardless of where you are. And ultimately, this, as I think you all have pointed out, collaboration is the key, and trying to figure out how can we all move forward. But you can't do that in isolation. And that's why we've created this agenda that really covers, like, some of the really big moving stuff that's here and now. And that's what I'm going to encourage you to get together, because it's that network of not just this, but that will be able to help you make the business cases internally and to get the tools being used to their fullest potential. So RegTech year 8 is growing up, and it's a teenager, no longer a toddler. So we're really looking forward to seeing where it can go. So thank you very much for joining us today, gentlemen. For those following up, want to know more about the conference, it's regtechconference.co.uk, not hard to find. All the research that we've been publishing on the fines and the RegTech agenda and the standard space, that'll all be up there, linked to the agenda item for that you care about most. And watch us out on LinkedIn. We have the RegTech Trade Surveillance Group, as well as the trading community that we started off with. A small group of us chatting about MiFID II is now over 4,000 people talking about everything, including digital assets. So Looking forward to having you all along that ride, and we will see you soon. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed the content, please like us so more people can join the conversation. Download all our episodes via all the major platforms. Come to the JWG website, which is jwg-it.eu, and follow our LinkedIn groups.